Afternoon. Prior to beginning the meeting, we'll go ahead and do roll call, see who we have here on the telephone line. First off, Rick Hansen?
Yes.
Okay, great. Chris Howell? With Burns McDonald?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Robert Hammer?
Yes.
Is that Hammer or Hamer?
Hammer.
Great, thanks. Rich Elsper?
Here.
Wonderful. Jim Adkins?
Here.
Amy Koenig? Mary Sissick?
Here.
Great, thanks, Mary. Wendy Harper and Doug Idol?
Wendy Harper's here. Doug will not be joining.
Okay, great, thanks. All right, we've got everybody online. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. This is the meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. It's Tuesday, March 13th, 2007 at 2:30 in the afternoon. We're here at the State Capitol Building in room 468 here in Pierre. My name is Dusty Johnson. Joining me here are Commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Kolbeck. We do have a number of people on the telephone line as well as a number of people appearing here in person in room 468. We'll go ahead and begin under administration. We have item number one, which is approval of the minutes of the commission meetings held on January 2nd as well as January 23rd, 2007. And ad hoc meetings held January 16th and February 1st, 2007. I'll first see if there are any any additions or corrections to the minutes. Hearing none, I think a single motion for all 4 minutes would be appropriate. Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
I will concur. The minutes are approved. Second, under Consumer Reports, item number one is a status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the commission. At this point, we'll look to Ms. Gregg for her report. Ms. Gregg?
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. The commission has received a total of 318 contacts since the last report was prepared for the February 13, 2007 commission meeting. 50 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 30 of the contacts involved electrical services, 16 contacts involved natural gas, 11 contacts involved cellular phone service, 176 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 35 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. And 428 of the 582 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved, and 2,171 of the 2,466 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved. And I just want to thank you guys for doing the local, recently did the public service announcement about the Do Not Call, because we go out as consumer affairs people and tell people to sign up for the Do Not Call, but don't really, sometimes I, as I've noticed some complaints we've gotten, neglected to tell people to call us if you get one. And just with that public service announcement, as you can tell from the numbers, we've been inundated with calls, so thank you.
And there was no sarcasm.
No. Undertone, maybe, no.
Inundated. Are we talking dozens or 100?
Like I said, we had 176 contacts that do not call in a month, and usually we average probably like 30 to 35. So good job, guys.
Any other additional questions from Ms. Gregg? Hearing none, we'll proceed. Thanks very much. We'll proceed under the grain dealer. Item number one is GD07-001, and it's in the matter of LW Sales / LW Seeds failure to obtain necessary licensure prior to operation as a grain dealer in the state of South Dakota. The question for the commission today is, shall the commission issue an order to show cause? At this time, we would look to staff, either Mr. Milhoff or Ms. Van Bakkeren, for their presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Van Bakkeren for staff. The Grain Warehouse Division had reason to believe that Mr. Weeding was selling grain without a grain dealer's license. They had reason to believe so due to a consumer complaint and due to previous experience with Mr. Weeding and his sales practices. Such suspicions were affirmed both through an inspection performed by Mr. Malhoff, the director of the Grain Warehouse Division, and through some simple follow-up and research that he performed. HESCO, who is on the line, is an affiant supporting the motion that is before the commissioners in this case. HESCO sells the same product to the same consumers as Mr. Weeding, and they consider their product, due to both industry and legal standards, to be grain. And further, the purchasing consumer, which happens to be a mushroom company in Pennsylvania, I believe it is, doesn't desire to purchase seed. They do indeed wish to purchase grain. And both Hesko and Mr. Malhoff are available for any further questions, and I'd ask Mr. Hansen from Hesko at this time if he'd like to expand on the product that was being sold.
This is Rick Hansen at Hesko. The product we sell is millet, which is small grain, an ancient grain, and the application in the spawn industry, which is an industry that produces the beds that mushrooms are grown on. They take that and mix it with a variety of nutrients for the mushrooms to be seeded into and grown on. And in addition to the customer that Mr. Weeding was selling to, I think we sell to four or five other spawn companies across the country for the same application. It is not a seed application. It is made to use a nutrient-type bed for sold to different mushroom companies.
Great, thank you. Staff has been in contact with Mr. Weeding's lawyer, and she opted to reserve any argument or objections at this time until a point in time when a hearing would possibly take place, if it's granted today by commissioners. Staff therefore respectfully requests that you grant our request for a hearing, and I'll defer any further questions to Mr. Malhoff.
Thank you very much. Does anybody else, either on the line or in person, wish to address this docket? Hearing none, we'll see if commissioners or advisors have any comments or questions.
I have one, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, of course.
This is for anyone who can answer. Without trying the case at this time, recognizing that ignorance is no excuse, however, I am interested in knowing to an extent, the party's experience in grain dealing, whether this was accidental or the person should have known better.
Commissioner Hansen, Jim Melhoff with staff. As Ms. Van Bakken initially pointed out, we did have an initial complaint about this back in October, which we looked into it, and it was explained at that time as a purchase of grain that was to be used for seed that failed to germinate. And then he explained the sales as isolated incidents just to get rid of that grain, that he was actually trying to produce seed and that he would not do it again. So staff's view is that he clearly knew what he was doing. The subsequent sales, he called it seed, which, based on the statutes that we have, and the Department of Ag has seed statutes, labeling standards. He did not meet any of the labeling standards. That's what my visit to his shop showed. So, though he was trying to call it seed, he was just writing seed on the bag, more or less, but according to our rules, it was grain. It was just cleaned millet, put in a bag, and then offered as seed. And in my view, I think that was simply a attempt to cover his tracks, so to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Malhoff. One follow-up question to that. Was there any prior, has the PUC had any prior experiences with this individual or any companies that he's operating?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes, I have one question. How long have you, Mr. Malhoff, how long have you tried to work with this individual, Mr. Reading, before we get to this order of show cause? Have you one time, two times, three times, 4 months?
My personal experience, we received the first complaint back in October. I sent a letter to Mr. Weeding at L&W Sales on November 1, and then we received the subsequent complaint recently, which prompted another visit to his place of business.
So he's had approximately 5 months to correct the situation?
Yes.
Thanks very much. And obviously, as Commissioner Hansen, alluded to, these are allegations on the part of staff, and we're not prejudging any facts, but it seems to me that there is sufficient sufficient information that would require further action on the part of the commission. So as a result, I'll go ahead and move that the commission issue an order to show cause.
I'll second.
I concur.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. We'll move to the electric portion of the docket. Item number one is EL07-002. It's in the matter of the application of Basin Electric Power Cooperative Incorporated for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of the Groton Generation Station Unit 2 project near Groton, South Dakota. The question before the commission is today, shall the commission approve the stipulation? I see that the applicants have moved to the microphone, so at this point we will go ahead and take your comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. My name is Russ Mather. I'm with Basin Electric Power Cooperative. I have with me Dick Schaefer, who is the project manager, our local counsel, Gene LeBrun, and some technical consultants that are on the phone to answer any questions or address any issues that may come up. As you correctly noted, and I can add nothing to it, we're here to request that the commission take the last step in the issuance of the permit to construct the Unit 2 combustion turbine project down near Groton, South Dakota. As support for that, we submit that we've satisfied all of the statutory requirements. We've entered into a stipulation with the staff, which I believe has been circulated with the commissioners, and would just like to be here to answer any questions that you might have, to address any issues that you might want to address in any more detail, and that's all we have.
Great. Thanks very much. And, of course, we do have a copy of the stipulation has been filed and is available online. This time we would look toward staff, Mr. Singer, Mr. Rounds, Ms. Van Bakkern, for their take and any explanation of the stipulation they have.
This is Kara Van Bakkern for staff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had several rounds of negotiations and everything from substantive changes to small, minor wording changes were done, and staff and Basin, I think we all feel comfortable that the stipulation does indicate any statutory requirement has been fulfilled, and staff therefore asks approval of the stipulation entered into by Basin Electric and staff, and also that commissioners grant the energy conversion facility permit for construction of the Groton Generation Station 2.
Great, thanks very much. You did a good job of restating the question. It's worth noting that the question for the commission is today, shall the commission approve the stipulation, and will also consider whether to grant the permit for construction of Groton Generation Station Unit 2 subject to the terms and conditions of the stipulation. So thanks very much, Ms. Van Bakkern. Does any other person or party wish to address this docket at this time? Hearing none, are there any comments or questions on behalf of commissioners or advisors? I might have one. Ms. Van Bakkern, this is a little bit of deja vu. We've obviously gone through this process with Groton Unit 1. Does this stipulation agreement differ in what substantive ways does this stipulation differ from that which the commission looked at for Groton Unit 1?
Any information as it referred to the pipeline in the first one is not included in this, as that will not be used. That was the largest change, as I recall, and I'll let Basin speak to anything that comes to their mind as well.
No, I think that's essentially correct. There are no right-of-way issues here. The pipeline is already in. Essentially, this is a duplicate, except for it is adding a second unit to an area that is already a brownfield area that's already been developed. None of those issues really involve. Other than that, I believe we've correctly stated the major changes.
Thanks. Any other commissioner or advisor questions, comments?
Just a curiosity. We refer to this as an 80 to 100 megawatt all of the time. Have you arrived at a certainty, or is that a question amplifying my ignorance by saying?
I'm not going to suggest that there's any ignorance there at all. I think it's a perfectly legitimate question because I've had it myself. I believe that the maximum output of this unit under ideal conditions is 1 or 2 megawatts above 100 megawatts. It's typically described as net 95 megawatts, which means after the station service requirements are fulfilled, that's the output that the unit will have.
Okay. So it has a nameplate of 95?
I believe 100.
Actually, this is Dick Schaefer from Basin Electric. The nameplate is actually 95. It's dependent upon ambient temperature conditions as to how much power the unit will produce. It's a bell-shaped curve. There's an optimum condition at about I'm not sure, 40 degrees or maybe a little lower than that where you get maximum output. And then as it gets colder, you have more station service and so forth, so your net output is less. Its output drops off fairly rapidly at real high temperatures.
So if it's a 98-degree day, then it's not going to have nearly the output that it would on a 40-degree day.
That's correct. Probably going to be down around 90 megawatts.
Oh, not huge, but I guess it's huge if you're not getting the electricity from it, yes.
It's huge if you need the power.
All right. What type of challenges do you think you might have? And again, this is not going to reflect on my vote, but I'm just curious for my own personal knowledge. When it's 30 degrees below zero and the MISO issues in EE2, is there a potential for loss of this as a generation facility?
Well, do you mean the reliability or the availability?
I'm sure the capacity and reliability is there. It's just a matter of if MISO says that we've got a challenge with we don't have enough electricity, but at the same time, when they go to an EE2, I believe they discontinue natural gas usage.
Oh, with the renewables.
Right. So I'm just wondering what kind of challenges you might be confronted with on a peak demand during real cold days.
Well,
if you're not comfortable answering it, that's fine. I'm just.
All I know about MISO is it's probably going to be 2012 or 13 before we can even hook into it. And presently, we're just serving our member load in eastern South Dakota.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
Now, if I could just follow up, Mr. Schaefer is entirely correct. Most of our power does not go into the MISO footprint. We do have one or two members that are in there, but most of it does not.
Other questions by commissioners or advisors? If there aren't any questions, I might make a couple of comments. First off, I think this, I thought you did a good job of stating the need, the reliability need for this. I think this is good news for the region to have an additional resource. If the commission were to approve this, it's an $81 million investment, and that's good news for South Dakota. Not that that's a prime consideration on the part of the commission, but it's a nice byproduct. The stipulation did have, as an attachment, the local review committee, and as in the past, I presume this commission will give a great deal of deference to the local review committee. And for this project, as with Groton Unit 1, I think it was worth noting that they were very supportive of the local review committee and found no significant adverse impacts. And I would just also note, by way of, you know, kudos to the applicant and maybe more importantly to staff, I mean, this was filed January 5th, and here we are a little over 2 months later, and from time to time, government moves excruciatingly slow, and I know we have heard complaints from some in the private sector about how slow some of our colleagues in other states move, but I do think it's worth noting this was filed in January, and here we are in March, and whether the commission votes up or down, presumably we'll have a final disposition today. So congratulations to everybody that worked so hard to make this this happen in 2 months. And I know you all have been at work at it a lot longer than 2 months. So, any other comments or commissioner questions or advisor questions, comments? Any final comments by the applicants or staff? Motion would be in order. I would move that the commission approve the stipulation and grant the permit for construction of Groton Generation Station Unit 2, subject to the terms and conditions of the stipulation.
I'll second.
I concur.
Motion carries. Thanks for very much to everybody involved.
Thank you again. Thank you.
We'll proceed now to the telecommunications portion of our docket. Item number one is TC05-099. It's in the matter of the establishment of switched access revenue requirement for Fort Ramble Telephone Company and Mount Rushmore Telephone Company. The question before the commission today is, shall it approve the switched access revenue requirement? I know that Mr. Best filed a memo to the commissioners, but since the moving party is Fort Ramble, perhaps it would be appropriate to look to them first.
I don't believe Fort Ramble's on the phone.
We'll go ahead and proceed then, Mr. Best.
Fort Randall, Mount Rushmore filed its cost study back in July 1 of 2005. A number of parties intervened. They then withdrew their interventions, so the only parties involved were staff and the telephone company itself. Staff asked a number of data requests, received responses back. Modifications were made to the cost study. The rate that is has been agreed to between the telephone company and staff is a reduction from what they were charging prior to the submission of this cost study. Staff would request that the commission grant the rates as set forth in staff memo with an effective date as soon as Fort Randall could implement the rate.
Thanks very much, Mr. Best. Is it we don't need a certain effective date, just as soon as they can implement it is acceptable?
I believe so.
Any questions or comments by commissioners or advisors? Hearing none, and I know Fort Randall isn't on the line, a motion is probably in order.
I'll motion that in the case of TC05-099 that the commission approve the switch to access revenue requirement as specified in the staff's recommendation.
Second.
I concur.
Motion carries. Thanks very much, Mr. Best. Item number two is TC07-007. It's in the matter of the petition of Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swiftel Communications for suspension or modification of dialing parity, number portability, and reciprocal compensation obligations. The question for the commission today is, shall it grant intervention to Altel, Sprint, Midcontinent, SDN, Mediacom, and SDTA? Rather than, I mean, all of these parties have filed. To my knowledge, Swiftel has no standing opposition to any of the interventions. But rather than hear from the requesting interveners, let's just look to Swiftel first, see if they have any opposition.
Mr. Chairman, this is Rich Helsper, and Mary Sizek will be responding on behalf of Swiftel.
Yeah, go ahead. Proceed, please.
Yes, at this time, Swiftel has no opposition to any of the requests for intervention.
Okay, wonderful. We'll pause to see if anybody, any of the people who filed petitions to intervene want to speak up. I don't know that it would be necessary, but they certainly have an opportunity if their filings do not speak for themselves. Hearing none, are there any commissioner or advisor? We'll look to staff, actually, first. Mr. Best, Ms. Kramer.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and staff would recommend granting intervention to the six parties.
Thanks very much. Are there any commissioner or advisor comments or questions? If not, I believe a motion is in order.
I will move that the commission grant intervention to Altel, Sprint, Midcontinent, SDN, Mediacom, and SDTA in TC07-007.
Second.
I'll concur.
That motion carries. Thank you very much. Under item number three, under telecom, TC07-008, it's in the matter of the filing by Adventure Communications Technology, LLC, for approval of its interstate switched access tariff and for an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates. The question before the commission today is, shall it approve the exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switch access rates pursuant to ARSD 2010-2711? And additionally, shall the commission approve the partial exemption of ARSD 2010-2712 with respect to calculation of the switched rate applicable in Quest exchanges served by Aventure? And finally, shall the commission approve the switched access service tariff? Do we have anybody from Aventure on the line? It doesn't appear so. As a result, we would turn first to Mr. Best or Ms. Van Bakkeren for staff.
This is Harlan Best of staff. Staff would recommend that the commission grant the exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates as the company is a startup. the partial exemption from 2010-2712 is with respect to the calculation of the switched access rate applicable in Quest exchanges served by a venture. What a venture would propose to do is charge the Quest switched access rate in the Quest exchanges, and then it would be in compliance with the non-Quest exchanges, wherein they would charge the rate as set forth in 2010-2712, which would be the LECA Plus rate. And that also that the commission approve the switched access tariff as filed by a venture.
Thanks very much, Mr. Best. Any comments or questions by commissioners or advisors?
I guess I have a question for Mr. Bass. We're talking about rates that are less than the Quest rate, correct, and equal to the LECA Plus rate?
The Quest rate would be approximately 6 cents, and the LECA Plus rate is 12 and a quarter.
And what we would be approving is actually less than the Quest rate, or
it, am I confused on that? The Quest rate would be approved for the town, for the exchanges of Vermilion, Yankton, and Yankton. Vermilion, Yankton, and Elkpoint.
Elkpoint.
Okay. And then they would, in their remaining rural areas, they would charge the LECA Plus rate.
And that would be in the Alcester and the other areas that's affected.
Right.
That
affected. Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Best, how common has it been for us to sort of have this two-tiered access structure?
This would be the first time.
Any reservations on the part of staff about that?
No.
Any further questions by commissioners or advisors or comments? Are there any motions?
I'll motion that the... I don't know. If I'll motion in the case of TC07-008 that the commission approve the exemption for developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates, and the commission approve the partial exemption of ARSD 2010-2712 with respect to the calculation of the switch rate applicable in Quest exchanges served by Venture, and also that the commission approve the switched access service tariff. Does that sound like a good motion, Ryan?
According to stipulations, regulations.
According to the stipulations staff has requested.
Second.
I'll concur. So that lengthy motion, which you did a fine job with, passes. Thanks very much. Telecom item number 4 is TC07-010, in the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and MCI Metro Access Transmission Services, LLC, and the question for the commission is today, shall it approve the amendment? We'll look first to Ms. Van Bockern.
This is Kara Van Bockern for staff. The amendment was properly filed and executed. It does not appear to contain any discriminatory language. No comments were filed, and staff recommends approval.
Thanks, Ms. Van Bockern. Do you know if any of the parties wish to say anything? Got any information?
I do not believe so.
Okay, great. We'll double check to make sure that's the case. Anybody else have anything on this item? Hearing none, are there any questions or comments by commissioners or advisors? Is there a motion? I will move that the commission approve the amendment.
I'll concur.
Motion carries. Oh, that's quite all right. You just stopped me from saying more words than I probably needed to, so... That motion carries. We'll proceed to telecom item number 5, TC07-011. It's in the matter of the filing by Northern Valley Communications, LLC, for approval of revisions to its interstate switched access tariff. Question for the commission today is, shall it approve the tariff revisions without requiring refund? Perhaps we'll look first to Mr. Singer, Ms. Kramer.
Yes, this in... Docket TC05197, the commission approved a settlement agreement which lowered Northern Valley's switched access rate to something below the LECA Plus rate at the time. In January of this year, Because of the LECA settlement, the LECA plus rate dropped, and therefore Northern Valley is filing a reduction to their rate, that their settled agreed upon rate, to get them down to the LECA plus rate. And that's simply what this filing does. And in July of this year, Northern Valley's rate will automatically fall some more in accordance with the settlement. Technically, the settlement agreement said that at no time should the Northern Valley's rate exceed the LECA plus rate, but there was a short period of time for about 21 days because of the timing and everything. So staff is asking that you approve this with a January 21, 2007 effective date, and that would allow them not to have any refunds because the small amount that they were overbilling for those 21 days is extremely insignificant and immaterial. And the reason why it's January 21, 2007 is because that is the billing, the start of their new billing. The 21st of every month is the start of their new billing cycle. So this would allow them to bill from everything from the 21st on at the lower rate.
Thanks very much. Anyone from Northern Valley Communications wish to comment?
This is Wendy Harper at Vantage Point, and we can share with Mr. Senior.
Okay, thanks very much, Ms. Harper. Mr. Singer, you spoke about the amount of money that might be subject to refund as being very small. Any idea how much money we're talking about?
I do not have that specific number in front of me, but I'm going to say it's well under $100.
Ms. Harper, would that be your understanding as well?
Yeah, I would have to calculate as well, but I would agree with you.
Could you repeat that? You sort of drifted off.
I do not have the specific numbers as well, but I would agree.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Ms. Harper. Appreciate that. Other questions or comments from commissioners or advisors?
Yes, this is for Mr. Stanger. Would this complete our transactions with Northern Valley? I know we've seen them at the last meeting. Does this bring them up to date on all their switched access, or is there more that we need?
I think this brings us up to date. The last one we had was related to this, but it was a time prior to what we're doing today. The only thing, it brings us up to date. According to the settlement stipulation, they may have to come in another 2 years to do something. Because that's when the settlement stipulation ends. It can continue on. The agreement can continue on if it works for everybody, but we shouldn't have, I can't think of any reason why they would need to come in again.
Okay, so we're good with their switched access rates and the settlements are in order for the next few years?
Yes, I believe so.
Perfect.
Any other commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Hearing none, I'll move that the commission approve the tariff revisions without requiring refund subject to, or rather, effective January 21st, 2007.
A second. Concur.
Motion carries. We'll proceed to telecom item number 6, TC07-012. It's in the matter of the filing by SS Telecom Incorporated for approval of revisions to its interstate switched access tariff. Question for the commission today is, shall it approve the tariff revisions without requiring refund? This looks remarkably similar to our last item, and we'll look to Mr. Singer.
It is extremely similar. The only difference in this docket, it's the exact same settlement stipulation was agreed to, just a different docket number. The only difference with this is that SS Telecom is getting off the ground a little bit slower than they originally anticipated, and it's my understanding that prior to January 1, 2007, there were no switched access billings at that time. They weren't even the activity they had. If they were up and running at that time, they weren't even billing because it was on such a test basis. So therefore, there would be no refunds if you approve it for January 21st.
So you think the same effective date is appropriate?
Wendy, does that sound good with you?
Yes, I agree with Mr. Singer.
Thanks. Anyone for SS Telecom have anything for the record? Hearing nothing, are there any commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Hearing none, anyone have a motion?
I will move that in docket number TC07-012 that the commission approve the tariff provisions without requiring a refund according to the stipulations recommended by staff.
Second.
I'll concur.
Motion carries. Thank you. Under telecom item number 7, that's TC07-013, it's in the matter of North Shore Marketing's failure to register as a telemarketer and the solicitations it made to those registered on the Do Not Call registry. The question for the commission today is, shall it issue an order?
You are the only person in the meeting now.
We should terminate the bridge because otherwise those people on the internet will hear this music. This is our last item on the agenda, so we'll be terminating the bridge. If for some reason someone has to call in on item number 7, we would request that they call the Public Utilities Commission main line at 605-773-3201. Thanks very much. We are still live on the internet, certainly, and with that, we will proceed. The question on telecom item number 7 is, shall the commission issue an order to show cause? We will look to staff and Ms. Van Bockern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Van Bockern for staff. We were originally contacted by a consumer. They spoke with Ms. Gregg from Consumer Affairs. They were called by North Shore Telemarketing. North Shore Telemarketing indicated that this consumer was on a list to receive a free subscription to a magazine. There was no existing business relationship whatsoever. This consumer contacted us, which is absolutely perfect. Ms. Gregg subsequently contacted North Shore Telemarketing, and they indicated they have no way to check who they call, why they're called, whether or not they're on the Do Not Call list. So it was pretty evident that they don't scrub any lists. They don't obtain updated Do Not Call lists. I followed up with a letter requesting some information. I got a call the same day they received that letter from a manager or owner, and he didn't believe the PUC has authority in this matter and refused to give any information. We made several other phone calls in an attempt to contact them. They've not responded, and Ms. Gregg and I therefore respectfully request your help and a hearing in pursuing this matter further, and certainly Ms. Gregg's available for any questions you may have as well.
Thanks very much. We'll double check. I don't think it's the case, but is anyone from North Shore or anyone representing North Shore Marketing here? Seeing none, we'll move to commissioner advisors or comments or questions. No, I'll kick one off. You know, in your filing on this docket, Ms. Van Bockern, this has less to do with what we're doing today and more to educate me a bit. You notice that it's staff's position that North Shore is guilty of the following, and you list four things. I know that each offense is worth $5,000. So are each of those four items punishable by a $5,000 fine if they were to be found guilty?
Staff's position is that yes, that each is a separate offense, and all can be all subject to that up to $5,000 fine.
D is, and since I'm just, you know, again, doing this for my own education, maybe I'll speak in more general terms, but when a telemarketer has placed an unwanted telephone call to someone on the list, is each call they make a potential violation and subject to a potential $5,000 penalty?
Again, it's staff's position that, yes, Mr. Chairman, each call is a violation of that statute.
Okay, thanks very much. That's all I have. Any other commissioner or advisor comments or questions?
Yes, Kara. How many people have we got? Just the one consumer, or how many consumers are we up to now?
One, this particular complaint, one.
Just one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, this is Kara from staff. It's pretty evident from the public announcement that you put out that it's possible that others have received phone calls from this company. I just don't feel that South Dakota consumers, they know how to sign up, but I don't know if they know how to follow up once they get that phone call. So I would be so bold as to say I would guess that this company is called Other South Dakota Consumers, and they simply got hung up on.
Okay. But we've only got one documented, one case documented right now with North Shore.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, forgive me. I was reading some of the information as you were asking questions of Ms. Van Bakkeren, and I don't mean to be redundant, but that's the school I'm in right now. I heard discussion pertaining to $5,000 fine for violation of South Dakota Do Not Call Registry. Would they not be, by the fact, in violation of the federal Do Not Call Registry if they are in violation of the South Dakota Registry, and is that, would that then be a duplicate fine? I believe that's $11,000 per fine in that situation.
Yes, Mr. Christner, I know our statutes do track with the federal regulations, and I'm not sure how that works with the federal and with our state penalties. I don't know how they work together or don't work together. I don't know if Commission Counsel, if Ms. Wiest would have any help on that one.
I'll pursue that outside the meeting then. I believe it is $11,000 fine per instance.
That's
fine. I just I'll let one of the counsel check that for me and let me know. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions by commissioners or advisors? Go ahead.
What is North Shore's address? Do we know that yet?
We have both a physical address and a P.O. box. And I believe when we served them via certified mail, we did it through the P.O. box, hoping that it would give them less opportunity to refuse the registered mail. So
we don't have the physical?
We do.
Oh, we do.
We do. It is 30 Eastern Avenue in Malden, Massachusetts.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, does anyone have a motion?
I'll motion in the order of TC07013 that the commission issue an order to show cause against North Shore Marketing.
Second.
I concur.
Motion carries. That completes the formal agenda for today's commission meeting. We do have a few announcements. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held March 27th, 2007 at 9:30 a.m. in room 412. Number two, commission meetings are scheduled for both April 10th and April 24th. Number three, a hearing and docket TC06-190 will be held in room 464 of the State Capitol Building on March 20th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. And finally, a hearing and docket TC06-191 will be held in room 412 of the State Capitol Building on April 3rd, beginning at 8:30 a.m. And Commissioner Hansen.
Just one more item, and that is I see a learned guest in the audience who would serve us well to probably memorialize his name, that he was here to testify. I don't know his name, but what is the gentleman's name who has accompanied you here today? Sir? Just simply state your name. I don't mean to embarrass you at all. Michael Shalanta. Is there a gentleman you're related to in the audience? let the court reporter note that he pointed at Mark Shalanta.
Welcome.
He seems surprisingly well behaved, all things considered. So, yes, that's right. Is there any further business to come before this commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.